Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Thank you very much, Howard. We are back here at the coveted corner booth at Skip Page's Little Bar, and it's clearly seasoned again in the Coachella Valley.
Oh, thank you.
You'll be able to hear the families, the people screaming in the background.
Yeah.
It is,
Oh, shoot, we're not at Little Bar.
What?
We're in elementary school in
La
Quinta.
Okay, I think potentially over there may be a daycare thing going on, which... If I were in charge of a daycare, I would probably take kids to Little Bar because I think that's a great field trip.
Well, not only that, but you give them a few and they settle down and take a nap.
This is called tequila. And I mean, I think it's fine. Of course, you've heard from Randy Florence, my spiritual guru and co-host and life coach.
And you're still alive.
Yes. It's hard to believe. And I'm Patrick Evans. We're delighted to have you along with us for another edition of Big Conversations, Little Bar. We should get directly to our guest because seldom have we had somebody this. And I'm not casting aspersions on any of our previous guests.
The other 140 guests.
Have we 140 guests?
Close.
That's impressive.
What you're saying is that this upcoming guest
and never
far exceeds.
Only one repeat in that 140 guests. Only one repeat. So we're still finding people who are willing to sit down with us, which is remarkable.
What is wrong with people?
But Dolores doesn't know us very well, and that's why we're with Dolores Robinson, who is one of the all-time great talent agents in Los Angeles, and she is here now in the Valley. You were just honored by College of the Desert. Welcome to the program. Thanks
Welcome.
For being here.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
We're delighted and a little surprised.
Very surprised.
Why?
We figured at this point, you figured we can't do much damage to your career.
That's right. So. I'm not worried about these two yokels.
Basically because it's over. I am so retired.
retired.
Yeah, I am so retired.
It sure seems like you're busy for somebody who's retired.
You have no idea. Huh? The floodgates open. Because I'm Miss Social Media.
Yes, you are.
Because I'm social. I got my feelings hurt. The Essence magazine, Black magazine for women, they have an award show every year. And the award show is called Essence Magazine, Black for Black Women in Film. I'm never invited.
What?
I'm never invited to the Image Awards. I couldn't get over it, so my feelings were hurt. So a couple months ago, during Women's History Month, I posted on social media, before Women's History Month is up, I'm going to blow my own horn. I am the first black female talent manager in the history of film and television, which I am.
Yep.
And if I don't blow my own horn at age 89, nobody else is. Well, the floodgates open. All of a sudden, you know, people are like, you guys, here I am.
And this is just, you know, we're really one step away from Essence. Yeah, we're really close.
Yeah, hopefully she's gotten a lot better invitations since then.
Well, she has. I mean, the College of the Desert honor was...
I was their inaugural speaker, which, you know, I was so honored. I thought, isn't this sweet? But that Laura Lee lady.
Laura Lee Jackson, she's
she
terrific.
She is so wonderful.
Previous guest on the podcast.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. I met her through Palm Springs Women in Film, who I came here in 2017 to escape. I wanted to get away from anything that had to do with show business. And I just really wanted to...
congratulations. This is as far from show business as you can get. This podcast is it.
Well, we were going to go to Blythe, but...
This is...
You did it.
You guys are so funny.
This is the exclamation point on her career.
I was not expecting to come out and have a laugh fest.
Oh, good.
This is great.
I hope that's a good thing.
It is a great thing. It's such a relaxing thing. So, you know, I got here, and I was hiding out. And then Palm Springs Women in Film gave me this glass ceiling golden
the glass ceiling award, which is a terrific I think it's one of the best things P-Swift has done aside from the Filmmakers Lab, because we have had a chance to honor some really impressive women who have truly, and I mean, you've broken two different glass ceilings, really.
Exactly.
You know, breaking color barriers and gender barriers. It's so impressive what you have done with your career. So, yeah. Well deserved.
Thank you. But I never think of two barriers. I did do color, I guess. I am colored.
For those of you listening,
if you Google Dolores, I'm going to get right to it because I was teasing Randy. Because often, I would say, I don't know, out of the 140 guests we've had, I'd say maybe a third of them
or more
have had some connection with Star Trek because I'm an enormous Star Trek fan. Tell Randy.
Show your tattoo.
Oh, I do have a Star Trek tattoo.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, I am.
And it's not his only one.
That is not true. That is the only one.
Have you met my boy?
I have not.
You will.
I would love to.
Well, wait a minute. I just figured it out.
Did you figure it out?
Your first client was LeVar Burton.
Absolutely.
Geordi LaForge on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Absolutely. Oh, my God. When you said glasses, it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. He was my first client.
Wow. Her very, very first client. And at what point, where was LeVar Burton in his career? You got him the Reading Rainbow gig, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm not being paid for it. I got fired.
You got fired by Geordi fired you.
Geordi fired me.
Let's get him on the horn.
You'll meet him soon. I'll tell you when.
Okay.
I was this poor little college child living in Philadelphia.
You were a school teacher in Philadelphia.
I was a school teacher in Philadelphia. My ex-husband was the original Gordon on Sesame Street. He was one of the producers of Sesame Street. And, you know, there we were, living a happy life, two children. And then he leaves me. And
for Elmo. No, that's not
right.
That's
no.
Not, no. For Bert.
Elmo had more sense.
Big Bird didn't.
Big Bird.
So he leaves me. And so my choice was... I have this problem, and my problem is I can't stand pity. I've never been able to handle pity.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, the first...
I just had to.
Don't you have a sound effect for that sort of thing, John?
The third person that walked up and put their arms around me with that pitiful look in their eye because he left you. I started packing up my 1968 Volvo station wagon, put my kids in the car, and drove west. Cleavon Little was a friend of my ex-husband because he met him on Sesame Street. He had brought Cleavon down to meet me. Cleavon and I, we were madly in love from the moment. He was going to Broadway to do a play with Dustin Hoffman called All Over Town. I can't fathom how I remember this. But he said, because we were both going through marriage kind of things at the same time. He said, you know, while you're going through it, go out, stay in my place for a while in Malibu.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
twist my arm.
Okay. My kids suddenly went from having a front yard with grass to the front yard being the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, wow.
Gosh.
And there they were in Malibu Park Junior High. Holly was voted most likely to succeed and photographed with Rob Lowe. You know, come on.
And she did okay.
Yeah, she, and so did he.
Rob.
Did Rob Lowe's, yeah, he's still working.
Oh, yeah. My God, yes.
He's got that game shows
called
now.
The Floor.
Yeah.
The Floor, yeah.
Yeah, which I look at just to test to see if my memory's still okay.
That's the truth, though. You watch these game shows, like Jeopardy. I watch Jeopardy probably once or twice a week just to see if,
You gotta. I mean, when you've lived a full-on life and you're
as
old.
As you have, my dear.
And you're old because,
as I am.
Yes. No, you're not. You're a young man.
I'm experienced.
I am 90, and I know I shocked you when I told you
I
was 90.
I mean, she did actually show us her driver's license to prove it, which...
Yeah. And the truth is, also, I brag about it, because...
You should.
I do. The main reason I do is because I'm still alive.
Now, in your business and in Hollywood and in Los Angeles, was there a time where you didn't tell people your age? I know, in terms of... work on camera, a lot of people have to do that or feel like they have to do that.
I never said it. They all assumed that I was younger than they were. I never said it.
Well, because you appear remarkably
young. Because I always looked younger than what I was. Oh, yeah. I never had to say it.
Well, you look remarkable. I'm still flabbergasted that you're going to be 90 on your next birthday.
I think it's like old people have to learn a secret that I learned. Don't put on too much makeup. I see all these old ladies with caterpillar eyelashes, and a shitload. And a shitload of makeup on. Don't do that. It's just, it's just emphasizing that something that you're not.
Right. It's drawing attention to the things you don't have. That's exactly right.
Exactly.
So you threw the kids in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I have a question. Oh. I need to go back to Philly just briefly.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you were also working at WCAU.
I worked at WCAU.
Now tell me what you were doing there.
Well, my ex-husband used to work at WCAU. And on the night that Martin Luther King was killed, he was going home because his wife and children had the lights out and they were hiding because we had just integrated a neighborhood and we were scared shitless. So he was leaving and they stopped him at the back door and they say, we don't have anybody else black to go on. He was not an on-camera personality. That began his on-camera personality.
Wow.
Because he was the only person in the studio that could go on and speak for them as a black person.
Wow.
Cow.
And, there's some advantages. And life is so damn unpredictable. You know, we none of us know, what this is all about. We don't know. And the way you begin this has nothing to do with the way you end it because, you have some control. But not that much.
Not a lot.
That's exactly.
Not you should have a new life coach by the end of this episode.
Oh, I've already fired.
Yes, because I'm now taking one on.
So he started an on-air career there, and because that's a one of the great historic stations in Philly.
Oh, I did a show there.
You were on air.
I was on air. That was my first on air, because. They said, he's gone on to New York, but she can talk. And so they gave me a show. It was called Right On. And my first guest was Melvin Van Peebles.
Seriously?
Seriously. And he came on, and I asked him a question like, Melvin, you've written books, and you've won this, and you've done that, and you're... What do you plan to do next? And he looked at me and quietly asked me, are you on the pill? And they let it air.
They didn't edit that out?
They did not edit it out.
And you didn't say edit that out? That's amazing.
Did you answer him?
No, I was sitting there shocked. That is just some funny shit.
That is crazy.
But it's outrageous, but it's funny.
I'm going to take the question out of my...
You should put that in rotation. You can ask that of some of our guests.
Yeah, are you on the pill?
Are you on the pill?
And what did he say?
Wow. So you did that program, but then you decided go west.
No, I went to KYW also,
okay,
which was a Westinghouse station. A young lady there knew me and said that they were looking for a public relations director. And would I go in and meet with Owen Simon, who was the guy who would be hiring. So I went in and I sat down with him. And I actually said to him, "What's public relations?" I did not know. And he said, "You're hired."
Oh, I love that, because he's a smart guy. Then.
He said something he saw that let him know that I could do this thing. So I did it for a couple years, and then I, for some reason, did a kid's show, and I named it after Smoke Paper. And I can't remember the name of it now, but later on maybe I'll come back with it. But the first show I did was called Big Kid, Little Kid, and I was the big kid. And my kids and neighborhood kids all did this show. And my co-host was a 7-foot boa constrictor wrapped around my shoulder.
No.
Did it have any lines? No.
No. And I think that I really lost that perfectly ungood husband. Because
I've never heard anybody described as ungood. I love that.
And I don't think I've ever said it before. It just came out. But he was in New York doing Sesame Street, and he came home, and he went to take a shower, and there was a 7-foot boa constrictor in the shower. So I lost a fur. I think that was the beginning of the
you
end.
You think that was, he's like, well, this is taking a turn.
Yeah. There's something wrong with this lady.
He kept finding wild animals in the shower
so
every time.
You would have this, every episode you'd have the snake with you?
Yes. Yeah. I have photographs of me and that snake.
Oh my gosh.
And I have photographs of my grandchildren now with a snake wrapped around them.
I did one TV appearance with a boa constrictor wrapped around my one, and that was enough. I wouldn't do that every week.
Must say that it was harmless. It didn't do anything, did it?
Well, no, but I had
snake fear.
A zoo guy right there to make sure.
But
the Jack Hanna.
It was Jack Hanna.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I've met him.
From the Tonight Show?
Yeah, Jack Hanna. He came to the zoo in Virginia in the market where I was working. He had the snake, he had a baby tiger cub, and a thing called a bear cat or a bentarong, which actually climbed on top of me.
By the end of the show, all there was the snake.
So, yeah, no, Jack Hanna. He's a character.
He's a good guy. I met him.
Yeah, he's terrific.
In L.A., my daughter was hosting a show at that time called The Talk, and he was a guest on The Talk, so...
Oh, that was CBS's version of The View, correct?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You seem to feel like you want to say something about that, mm-hmm. Doris.
Shall she keep her mouth shut?
It's ungood.
It's ungood.
Let's say this, that the hostess on the show was Julie Chen,
yes,
who was married to the head of CBS. Les Moonves, who was really one of my very best friends. Hal, when my daughter got married, she got married at Les Moonves' house.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
That's how good friends we were. Les was coming in the gate. Oh, I could tell so many stories.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Tell us. I love Les stories.
When he was coming through the gate coming home, at the wedding rehearsal, he looked at me and he said, "Dolores, is that Jesse Jackson standing at my doorstep?" I said, "Yes, he's going to marry my daughter." That's how close Les and I were. But his wife was Julie Chen.
Yes. And she was a news anchor with CBS. That's how she met Les.
She got from Moonves the reports on who was the most popular on that show and who wasn't.
Mm.
So she and Sharon Osbourne got together and got rid of Holly Robinson Pete and Leah Remini.
Because she was too popular.
Because they were too popular.
Yeah, they don't like threats.
Wow.
They don't like people who threaten.
Exactly. That's exactly. you know.
Wow.
Anybody threatened either one of us on this show yet?
Like John McMullen.
John, yeah, you guys suck.
Somebody said that to you?
Many people, I'm sure, have said
that. Actually, we did have one guest who sat down, and the first thing he said is that he didn't like my shirt. And it wasn't even as nice as this one.
That one doesn't even have a collar.
That's a collar.
Can we talk about my shirt?
No.
The Dodgers, lady. Dodgers.
Yeah.
My shirt, it's Mookie Best's birthday.
Right.
Yep.
I'm a huge Dodger fan. Ask me why.
Why are you such a Dodger fan, Doris?
My grandson, who has autism, is the locker room attendant for the Dodgers.
Aww. No way.
They hired him 7 years ago.
Oh, I love that.
How old is he now?
27.
Wow. That's remarkable.
That is so.
Well, you have, of course.
Could I ever not be? And that.
So you've made me dislike the Dodgers a little less.
Now I'm a Dodgers fan.
Please, how could you not be a Dodger fan after
that? Come on, that's a great story.
Well, I can give you the list.
Well, you mean winning World Series more than your team does? Oh.
I think I'd have to add that. Maybe over the last 15 years, I've been pretty happy.
So, yesterday.
I don't even know who you root for.
Baseball?
That's a little white ball, and these guys
are. It's a secondary sport. I mean, it's, you know, we all know there's football. Football, and then there's football, and then there's college football.
Can I say to you...
And then there's the baseball
she
playoffs.
She knows a little bit about football.
Can I say to you, it's my least favorite sport.
Football?
Yes.
Really?
That and boxing, because it does such harm to the body.
It is a very, very rough sport on the body.
However, my son is a gigantic Eagles fan. My son-in-law was once the quarterback for the Eagles.
Yes.
I cannot help but be an Eagles fan. I'm just, so every Eagles game, I'm there cheering them on.
They're fun to watch. I want you to go to a baseball game with me sometime.
I've been to many baseball games.
No.
Many.
You haven't gone with me.
You call it stall ball. I know. You're
I will
that
tell
kind
you how to
person.
Watch a game.
I did once fall asleep and from about inning four until the seventh inning stretch.
You're one of those.
I like a little action.
You're one of those.
No, you know, John White, who works with me at the TV station. I'm sure you've seen John.
Yes.
He's the biggest Cubbies fan I've ever met in my life. So we would often go down to, if the Cubs were playing the Padres, we'd go down to see the Cubs, that sort of thing. So I've been to many baseball games.
But you know one thing about baseball? If you're a fan of a baseball team, you can't let that go. The same way that you're a fan of your team.
We can say it. We're on air to the Giants.
And they let him go, and he went to the Mets.
We don't have to go into that.
Okay.
She's
right.
Talking about Willie Mays.
She knows a lot about
1973.
She, for some reason, she does.
Except he got to play in a World Series that year for the Mets.
Soto.
Sorry.
I'm talking about
We started talking about baseball. I'm like Star
Soto.
Trek with you.
Juan Soto.
Oh, Juan Soto. Oh, I like to talk about Willie Mays. Like
Juan Soto.
50 years ago, same story.
Juan Soto.
Yeah.
Nobody's a more loyal baseball fan at this table than I am.
No, that's true. You're a Mariners fan.
The Mariners?
Yeah, because I'm with the only team that has never gone to the World Series.
You like losers.
Not this year. They're going all the way.
That's why he's producing our show.
I got you.
He does. He loves losers. He's got two of them right here.
Not really. Ask me a question so I can stop running my mouth.
No, we're enjoying this. All right, so let's go back. So you moved out. You started living in this wonderful home in Malibu. And you got a job at an agency, but you weren't, at that point, a talent manager.
No, I was an agent. I wasn't even an agent. I was, like an assistant.
Right?
I was assistant reception, yeah. Which was a big deal for me because I'm a little black girl that went to college. And when you go to college, you don't go backwards and become a secretary. Oh, hell no. No, you are.
Well, you were on air in Philly. I mean, you had stuff going on.
Moving up in the world, And I had been that public relations director. I had done all that. But I went backwards to go forward. And I accepted a job as a receptionist, and moved it on. My first agency clients were LeVar.
Right.
And Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill?
Yes, darling.
Wow.
So cool. So now she's got my side.
Yeah, because he's a giant.
I'm a Star Wars
guy.
He's
a huge Chewbacca
no
fan.
I have stuff in my garage now. That I have the original Star Wars T-shirt before they hired Mark.
I'm going to cry.
Before they hired Mark, they did a T-shirt that they gave out at the premiere, which I was at the original Star Wars premiere. Yeah. They gave. So I just grabbed up two T-shirts and held on to them because I'm a hoarder. How does one know that one is a hoarder?
How?
Because when one is about to turn 90 and still has her first grade report card, one is a hoarder.
That is, yes.
That's a hoarder.
Wow.
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it should also be said that it was 2 years from the time you were a receptionist until you opened up your own agency?
Yeah.
That's amazing, Dolores.
I didn't realize it was such a short period of time.
I mean, you skyrocketed.
So tell me about how did you go from a receptionist to all of a sudden LeVar Burton and Mark Hamill?
Well, Mark Hamill was the agency client. I didn't go from him as a
Got
management
it.
Client. I went to LeVar simply because LeVar was a student at USC, and he came in the office one day, and there I was, and he recognized some familiar stuff about us. We was both colored.
And he knew right away.
Yeah.
He's no dummy.
He
only played a blind character on Star Trek.
He and I just kind of like really hooked up immediately. And
did you just break some news for us?
Yeah.
You and LeVar.
Oh, no, not hooked up.
Oh, okay.
God, no.
Really?
Are you kidding me?
I'm sorry, that was going to be really exciting.
No, that's...
He did ask if she was on the pill, but no, that was the other guy.
That was the other guy.
No, he was like 18, 19 years old, a student at USC, and I was 38, but nobody knew it. See, so there. The agency, there he was. He and I had traveled the world with Kunta. We went to Australia. We went to...
Right, the Roots was his breakthrough role.
Absolutely. We traveled everywhere. And we came back, and the agency were trying to figure out what to do with him as a career.
Yeah, what's next?
What's next? And they decided it would be a television series. And I went home in horror that this kid who had this worldwide career, all they could think of was putting him on a television series.
They couldn't find movies to put him
they
in.
They couldn't find a TV movies?
Yeah.
Come on, create something.
He did pretty well.
Because,
yeah, he did all right.
Because she left, she being me, went home to Malibu, printed up some cards that said that I was now a manager, and began managing him. And called the agency, told them I quit, and he was not doing any television series. I was in charge from here on in. And
what was the first gig you found him?
It was about a baseball player, Ron somebody. Oh my, 90-year-old memory. It was about a baseball player who...
It was a famous baseball player, so they didn't play for the Giants.
No.
I'm sorry. That was a cheap
shot. I think
he
played for Detroit, and he did some criminal things and got thrown in jail, and so LeVar played his life story. That was the first.
That was the first one, okay.
Yeah. And so I because LeVar and I were having so much fun and traveling the world, I wasn't going to stop that. And then the reality hit me. Girl, you got to make more money. You got two kids. You got to put them through college.
And the one client.
The one client.
Wasn't doing
yeah,
it.
That's not enough.
That ain't doing it. So.
Well, so who was
who was next? I mean, I have a laundry list of people. I mean, you launched the career of Martin Sheen.
Well, he was next. Because I was walking through the Market Basket.
And he
which
did
was,
okay, too.
He became president of the United States.
Right.
I was walking through the Market Basket, which was a grocery store back in the 70s. And he was pushing his shopping. And you know, I looked at him and I said, hi. And he said, hi. And I said, I just have something to say. Whoever is billing you in this next movie that they're billing you behind James Farentino, nothing taken away from him, but whoever was billing you behind him after you did Apocalypse Now.
Well, this was after that.
You're billed after him. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
So he said, yeah.
You immediately had his attention, obviously.
Stop pushing his cart.
I had his attention. And he said, where do you live? I said, here in Malibu. Your son Emilio is my son's best friend in Malibu Park Junior High. And he said, you want to come up in my house tonight and let's talk? I went up to his house that night and to meet his wife and tell him and repeat to her what I had just said to him. And they were interested and they said, we have to get to know you better. Would you like to go out with us tonight? We're going to a play at the Mark Taper Forum. It's starring Barnard Hughes and it's called... I can't imagine that I'm still remembering this shit. I can't remember what I did yesterday. But anyway, they took me to this play and they said, we have to stop and pick up a friend and he'll be your date. So we stopped and we picked up this guy and he got in the back of the car, turned around, looked. Al Pacino.
No way.
Yes way.
Al Pacino was your date for the play.
Yeah.
And how long did you two
date? Sheen.
He and Martin were such great friends. And we went to the play together and had fun together. Nothing with Al Pacino and me. We just...
You didn't continue dating?
No. It was not anything more. We did meet again at Martin's, like, 70th birthday party. He was there, you know. But...
Didn't Al just have, like, a baby?
He's always having babies.
Yeah. He and Mick.
He and Robert De Niro.
De Niro. That's right. They both just had babies.
De Niro got a black girl thing.
I was unaware of that. I didn't know that.
Check out his last three or four wives.
Oh, okay.
His last three or four.
All right, so you go to the place, but ultimately you signed Martin.
I signed Martin Sheen.
And that was post-Apocalypse Now, so he was already on a very nice trajectory. That was a big deal, that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, by the way, and I happen to like James Farentino, but you're right. I mean, like, why is he in front of Martin? That doesn't make any sense.
Not at
it
all.
Was because of Michelle. What was his wife's name? Michelle... The red hair.
James Farentino?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't remember. There
you go.
I don't remember his wife at all.
But
she speaks highly of you.
Well.
But having Martin Sheen as a client had some advantages.
Yes.
One day the phone rang, and my receptionist said, there's someone on the phone for you who says he's Marlon Brando.
No way.
It was. He was trying to find Martin's number.
Oh.
It was after Apocalypse Now, and he knew that he found her. Somebody gave him information that I was Martin's manager. So he called the person who was Martin's manager. We were on the phone for 45 minutes. Never saw him or talked to him again since.
That was
it. But I so appreciate that 45 minutes.
That's incredible.
What was that conversation like?
Everything. Because he found out that I was a woman of color, and that appealed to him because he's such a liberal, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, it just went on from there.
Well, you continue to have a tremendous relationship with Martin and his family. I mean, I just saw
now.
Now. You were just talking today on social media about Charlie, his son. And what a delightful human being. I mean, obviously had his troubles. And
I posted on social media that I used to take Charlie to baseball games.
Yeah.
He and Rob Lowe when they were 14. And to Dodger games, excuse me. But so I've known him and I've been involved in that family for a long time because I managed Martin. I managed Emilio during Brat Pack days, et cetera, which was really fun.
Oh.
And
my wife would melt right about now because like those movies, like The Pretty in Pink and Breakfast Club.
Oh God,
those are your favorite films.
If you go down my social media page, I mean, you'll see a photograph of me, Tom Cruise, and Emilio, and we all are kids. I look like I'm their age, and I'm not. But they were. It was at that time. I mean, I was totally in the middle of all of that.
I'm supposed to get married in a month from now. Although I've been with my partner for 30 years, but could you hook me up with Emilio Estevez?
No, but I, no.
What is the last
before you get married? This
no,
is your bucket list.
But I will do something.
I have had a attraction to him since
the young the Mighty Ducks.
No, I'd say it's a little before that. Maybe like the Breakfast Club. Yeah,
he had that smoldering look.
Yeah,
I just knew that everybody liked him. You can't marry him, but if you and your partner would like me to marry you, I will.
Oh!
I went to Los Angeles 2 weeks ago, and I married, here, going on 90-year-old me, married my 81-year-old girlfriend to her 83-year-old boyfriend at Sherry Lansing's house.
And they bought a house directly across the street from an elementary school.
Just to add some flavor into it, it was Sherry's house.
Sherry Lansing.
And I started the ceremony like this. I have known Lynn Rothman for over 50 years. About 6 years ago, she introduced me to her boyfriend, Bernie. And I said, when I meet anybody, a man like Bernie, I'm going to marry him. And I am today, but not to me.
Oh, you did marry him.
And it went over so well.
That's lovely.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Did you write that down? Because Randy is an officiant.
I'm going to steal that line.
I've married three couples now. I married Roger to Brad, and they have two children and live happily ever after. Last year at New Year's, I married Ross to Grant up on the mountainside here. I'm in business. I got a license. If you want to remarry, I'll do it too. Remarriage?
Just think.
I want to. My wife doesn't want to.
Just keep you with Emilio.
John and Emilio.
Ask me a question so I don't keep rattling on. Come on, y'all.
All right, we're going to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back after this important message from our friends at the McAllen Theater, the sponsors of our next segment of Big Conversations, Little Bar.
From Grammy-winning songwriters Brandi Clark and Shane McAnally, Tony-winning writer Robert Horn, and Tony-winning director Jack O'Brien comes a musical about corn.
Corn!
Shucked, the Broadway musical comedy is about an unlikely hero, a lovable con man, and an amazing battle for the heart and soil of Cobb County. Shucked, play in McAllen Theater, November 25th through 30th. Tickets at McAllenTheater.org.
Welcome back to Skip Page's Little Bar. The segment is presented by the McAllen Theater. Lots of great performances this season, and we encourage you to check them out by visiting McAllenTheater.org today. I'm just looking over the list. It's always really...
Wahlberg.
Jada well, Pinkett. Randy Quaid.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that had to be interesting.
Tell us some stories about Randy. Because there have got to be some stories.
Because you guys might not see exactly the same on every topic.
He was not that. He was not that then. He was an incredibly sensible, lovable, wonderful... liberal. He was a wonderful human being. And he was married to this great woman. They had a nice baby. His agents were friends of mine, Sandy Bressler and John, whatever his last name is now. They were. And then he remarried.
And he went crazy.
And all of a sudden,
go crazy.
It just went off. And guess
what? Now, were you still his talent manager at that time?
No.
No.
When he left his wife, I was over because I just knew something was different here and something was going wrong here. But he... Wow. Look around. Guess who's joining him? Dennis! My sweetheart, Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
Have you checked him out lately?
No.
Well, he just didn't just do the Reagan biopic?
That was a while back, wasn't it?
Yes, he did, but
it wasn't that long ago.
That's okay. You can play Reagan.
Sure.
But check him out lately, where his politics okay. are.
Just all right, let's talk about Pierce Brosnan, whom I happen to adore. Like, I have kind of a... I have the same thing that John does with Emilio Estevez.
I get it. I get it.
If and I had that list, he'd be on it.
And you are so right. What a one. His wife, Cassie...
Yes.
...came in to meet me. At that time, I have to fit all these stories in. At that time, I was running something called Blake Edwards Entertainment. Blake Edwards, who was my dear friend, who I loved. I wanted to marry him. Blake. Julie,
you could have married him, and I could have married Julie, and we could have had a great relationship.
But it wasn't to be. So, Blake.
I see you more with Peter Sellers. Go ahead. not you, Dolores.
I loved Peter Sellers.
Oh, right.
But anyway, I was at Blake Edwards Entertainment. Cassie Brosnan came in for me to manage her. And after several conversations, she said, Dolores, I really don't want you to manage me. I want you to manage my husband. I want you to manage Pierce. Pierce needs help now. And she put me on to Pierce. And
was this before James Bond?
Yes. At Blake Edwards Entertainment, there was a young man. Often in these organizations, there are people who are threatened by me, and they're usually white men.
About my age.
I imagine that you threatened a great many people.
I didn't know it.
But you weren't trying. No, of course not.
I wasn't trying to do anything.
Yeah, I think that said more about them than it did about you.
100%.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, you know, Hollywood is just built on insecurities.
Okay. And
good point.
So getting to Hollywood and its insecurities, a question I'm going to give an answer to that you might ask later. How the hell did you get so into the Hollywood community?
How did you?
How did I? Because liberal people like to think that they have a black friend. And there I was.
Standing. Well, my black friend Dolores.
And there I was.
I can't ready, be racist. Willing. I have a black friend, Dolores.
That's right. But, you know,
ready, willing, and able.
I would add to that answer because you said something that was really very telling. When you were talking about Martin Sheen, there were so many connections. You develop these relationships, and you're a relationship person. It's clear that you're a relationship. So I think it's, you know, yeah, so people.
It's also. Well,
they might say, you know. I really need to call someone. I need to call Dolores.
Yeah, they're going to grab that on my side. Yeah.
It's also something that I've said many a time, and I've repeated over and over again. I will talk to a chain link fence. You know?
And that's why she's here.
That's right.
Exactly. I always like to say that the fact that I was the first black talent manager had something to do with that I was black, but it had more to do with something else. If I indeed had stuck to a client list of all black clients, nobody would have paid one bit of attention to me.
Yeah.
It was because I started managing white clients, name white clients. That's why people paid attention to me.
Mark Wahlberg. As an example.
Yeah. And I managed. And by the way, I love to tell the story that you always have to have help in the middle of all of this. In the middle of me, with all the uproar about this black girl who was suddenly doing all this stuff, you have to do something spectacular for people to turn around. I did something spectacular. Sue Mengers was big time Hollywood agent. And she used to say to me, when I managed a guy named Michael Clark Duncan, she used to say to me, Dolores, Put him in a television series. You will never make money off him. He's too big. He's too black. Blah, 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 blah. I said, now I'm going to do something here. He had just done The Green Mile. Okay? He was... There was an offer out to him to do something called Scorpion King with The Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? They made an offer to me of like maybe like $30,000 for him to do it, and The Rock is and blah, blah, blah. And he had just done Green Mile.
Green Mile, which
and,
was...
And got an Academy Award nomination, okay?
That's worth a little more than $30,000.
It's a little more. So, but...
He's not even going to read a script for that.
A lot of people would have done it. I said, no, no, no. I'm not doing this. I want $1 million. Do you know what... Giving a black guy $1 million to be... it was not going to happen. And do you know how it happened? Dwayne The Rock Johnson called me and said, what's going on here? There's a hookup. There's some snag in this negotiation. What's the problem? And I said, I want $1 million. I said, you just got nominated for Academy Award. I gave him my argument. And he said, I think you're right.
I need you to make a couple of calls for me.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson made me look so like I was the major negotiator.
Wow.
He blinked.
I made the biggest deal that... I didn't make that deal. Dwayne The Rock Johnson made that deal. But who got credit? And when they looked and they saw me making that deal for Michael Clark Duncan, yeah, all of a sudden my status went through the roof.
I bet. Now, you spent some time behind the camera, or in front of the camera. You were on one of my favorite shows of all times, Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Only to play Holly's mother, and just for one scene.
You must have had to coach a lot for that.
And you know what I did? You know what I did? You know why I did it? I did it because I did this a lot. I was a judge. No, I was in the jury of an Emilio Estevez movie. I was on the background. I'm the walkthrough person.
You were in a Jim Jones movie.
I was the first person to drink the Kool-Aid and die. I was the first.
I'm number one.
Dad, I'll die for you. I drank my Kool-Aid and laid down on the ground and died. Well, guess what it was for? Screen Actors Guild Insurance. I only did those things to get Screen Actors Guild Insurance. I was a single woman raising two children. I needed Screen Actors Guild Insurance.
That's awesome.
I love your brutal honesty. That is tremendous.
So now let's go forward. The reality show. Hanging with the Peets or something
It was called For Pete's Sake when it was Oprah. And she held us for 2 years. And when she dropped us, I moved to Palm Springs. And then Hallmark said, oh, we like that show. Let's pick it up and put it on for 2 more years. Which let me, in my 80s, drive back and forth from Palm Springs and pretend that I was the pain-in-the-ass mother-in-law living in the guest house, which I was.
But you were typecast.
I was. And I had fun. You know, I had fun doing it.
Did the family have fun?
The kids sometimes didn't have fun. But, you know, yeah, I mean... Mostly it was a good experience.
Did you guys make the decision to stop it?
No.
Oh, okay.
You know, Hallmark did, and so did Oprah at the time.
Yeah.
And then after that, COVID came, and people stopped asking me to take selfies at Costco. Because I was wearing my mask. Nobody knew me.
Nobody. All right, I've got more questions about clients. Jada Pinkett Smith.
Ooh.
She answered that one.
I think there's more to be said.
I know more about the slap than anybody. Simply because Chris Rock is one of my very best friends. I go to his house at Christmas. He sent me on a trip to Portugal with his mother. He took me to Beyonce's last performance with Diana Ross.
We need to start over. We need to start this podcast.
There's a lot going on here.
Oh, so much. It's just too much. And
this may be a big conversation. It's Little Bar's first two-parter.
So, and all black performers from Philadelphia, we sort of have a club. There's Will Smith, there's Patti LaBelle, there's Holly, there's me.
I did not think about the Philly connection.
Yeah.
There's that Philly connection.
That makes a lot of sense.
So Will has been a friend of mine for years, okay? So there I am, Chris Rock, and Chris sent me, and Netflix sent me to London as a part of Chris's special, that special that he did, the big slap special.
Yeah.
They sent me with his mom to... Chris has been just, okay, we get it, Chris and me. So there's Chris and me.
You guys are tight.
Tight.
You hang.
There is Will and me. Tight, but a little less. Then there's Jada. I managed her for 3 years. She was my client.
Difficult client? Well, I imagine at some point all clients are difficult.
All clients are difficult.
But most of your clients last longer than 3 years.
Yes. And you can disagree with some of them and some of them you can't.
And you couldn't disagree with her.
No.
Okay.
So when the slap came, I was looking at it because where was I? Chris Rock called and asked me had I been to the Academy Awards before. And I said, yes. And he said, will you be my mother's date? Because I can't let her in that room unless she's with somebody who knows how to do that room. So I was his mom's date when he hosted the Academy Awards.
Oh, phenomenal.
Really. I'm telling you, guys, life is a trip. And mine, I have had so many privileges. As tough as it was. So... that's basically where it began.
So, what was your reaction? Because you knew both of these men, and Will Smith's wife was your client.
What I saw was Will laughed when Chris made that joke because it was a good joke. It was not okay. But he looked over at her, and she gave him the side eye.
That was it.
And he was not going home to deal with that.
Well, now he's dealing with a whole lot more.
I ain't saying nothing.
Will, do you think he will? I mean, obviously, he's done some work since, but will he ever work his way back into the status that he was prior to the slap?
I don't think he'll work his way back to that same status because he'll always have people who are questioning that.
Yeah.
But he'll work his way back. He'll come back.
I mean, he's very talented. I mean, so talented.
And by the way, a lovely man. He's just a nice guy.
I've always been a fan. I was really shocked at the slap.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just really...
Well, everybody was. We all thought it was an act.
Yeah, right? it seemed like at first it was a bit, but then it clearly wasn't a bit.
Ain't you going to ask me about P. Diddy?
Okay, let's talk about P. Diddy. All right, what...
Any party stories?
Did he ask if you were on the pill? No, that's...
No, I had a bit of a relationship with him. I could see through him. I saw who he was. I met with him because he wanted to do a show with one of my clients.
Okay.
And I saw who he was. If nothing else, if I don't have anything else, the one thing that I have that's kept me through all this, my survival thing, I can read you. I can read people. I get you immediately. I know who you are. I know who you are. Right now.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And I just want to apologize.
And I read him. He they gave him a sentence, and he should have gotten more. That's all I can say.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's arguing with that.
Yeah. That's what.
Can I say something, guys?
Of course.
I think it's really important for me to say to you and to everybody that there's always hope. There's always a bright cloud. There's always sunshine. There's always another side. Life, the life you were born into, does not have to be the life you live. The life you were born into, you can pick it up. I was born in a house with no running water. It was a shack. There was an outhouse down 50 yards down the backyard in the snow in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And there was a Sears Roebuck catalog, which was at that time considered toilet paper.
Yes, it was soft paper.
That's exactly. So if I can come from there to sitting here with you right now, I'm not saying anybody can, but I'm saying, really, yes, you can. I'm saying that, you know, we don't know where life's going to take us. We just have to know how to take advantage of it and make it work for us.
Well, you seized on every opportunity. I feel like you were one of those people who recognized an opportunity when it showed up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Survival instinct.
And you weren't afraid to ask for it.
Oh.
Well, as you said, you had two kids at home.
That I had to support because ex-husband... Okay, bye.
He was sleeping with Big Bird.
No, he left me for a Puerto Rican.
Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny.
Bad Bunny.
Oh, my
God. Bad Bunny. And I'm a Bad Bunny fan, but he did leave me for a Puerto Rican. But
well, I think it's good that you don't hold that against Bad Bunny.
No, but that really comes full circle. That's so funny. That's
Can I ask you, where did this come from? All of this stuff, as you were growing up, where did this come from?
It's such a really different story about me. My mother's name was Battle. In our family, her nickname was Battle. So here I am, the daughter of Battle. So there's something about me that kind of took that name seriously. But she... I have so many stories, guys. You're going to have to invite me back.
We will.
Because...
Oh, 100%. Are you kidding me?
Because here's the one story that I'm not going to go through right now because it's too long. But Ancestry.com found... Let's start here. My father left my mother. I like to say that that way because I don't like to say he left us. He left my mother. It wasn't about us. He left my mother when I was 4. My younger brother was 2. My older brother was 6. And he went to New York. My father was a very light-skinned man. As we say in the West, light-skinned. He went to New York, and he married a German lady. When I was 14, I went to New York because my father and my Uncle Jim had come down to the town that we lived in Pennsylvania. They used to come down for funerals, so they came down for a funeral. They took me back. On the way into New York, in the Holland Tunnel, my father told me that he had remarried. And he married this German woman, and the next morning, I met my sister. She was 9 months old. She was in the crib. She had blonde hair and blue eyes. And that's a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
Fade in.
I would imagine.
Fade out. My father was a major alcoholic, and one day he came home from work. And when that little girl was like 8 or 9 years old, her mother said, enough of this shit. and packed her bags and cleared the apartment out and disappeared. And for years, we didn't know where she was. So, on the reality show, the producers all loved me standing there with this photograph of this little blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl who was my sister that I was looking for. Well, we found her.
Oh.
About 5 years ago, we found her. My nephew called me and he said, I found this man in New Jersey. He's Italian. And I can't say his name, but it's a very Italian name because I don't want to expose him. And he said that we're related. Turns out we're both your nephews. He's the son of that girl, that woman. She disappeared into the white race. I discovered through him and Ancestry.com a whole white family.
Wow.
I have all these white people, blonde, blue-eyed, white people who are my nephews and nieces and cousins.
Sis, is that you?
I found her. I talked to her. There's nothing we have in common, not one thing.
Had she spent any time trying to find...
Hell no. She spent all her time denying. She acted like she didn't know her father was black.
Oh, wow.
So she disappeared into the white race. So at 18, she had this baby that she gave up for adoption. And the nice Italian family in New Jersey did not know the boy, the little baby that they adopted at 2 days old, that his grandfather was my father.
Okay.
You know?
So after you found each other, has there been any establishment of a relationship, or is it just...
I called her, and we talked. She lives in a trailer park in Ohio.
Okay, so no.
And I have gone from Malibu to Beverly Hills to Palm Springs. What do we have in common?
Yeah, not much. Not much.
I don't even know what to say.
I want to ask a question. We got to wrap up.
Okay.
But this lengthy history you have, and the barriers that you've broken, and now you declare that you're fully retired and very happily so. But looking back and looking at Hollywood today, do you see the difference that you made on that town?
Yeah, I can see the difference I made. I know that if I were to go back to Hollywood now and I were to take on all black clients, I could be rich. Because they can work now. And in the day that I was there, the reason I had to take on white clients is because Hollywood wasn't hiring black clients. That's it. Yeah. And you know who was the... And you have to give credit, by the way, to people who helped you along the way. I did a favor for a politician in Texas. Jack Valenti said to him, you help me. I need to be able to pay you back. And the guy said, I have a friend. She's just getting into Hollywood now. And I'm not in your business, but she is. Jack Valenti introduced me to Lou Wasserman, Frank Price, Mike Medavoy. Every head of every studio, Jack Valenti set me up a meeting with.
Wow.
Simply because I helped that guy with a political favor. As a result of that, Lou Wasserman and Edie Wasserman became, for some reason, my best friends. And we had Christmases and Thanksgivings together. I'm still, Casey Wasserman is still a good buddy, their granddaughter. Edie and I had a plan. And our plan was my son was going to marry her granddaughter. We would have babies together. Okay. And neither of them saw it that way. But they did one thing to me. Edie said to me, Dolores, you need to be on boards. I didn't even know what boards were. Okay? She said, I'm going to put you on a board. She put me on the California Motion Picture and Television Home Board, which I am still on. And And when my day is up here in Palm Springs, I will be going to the California Motion Picture and Television Home. at 90, I do have a tattoo that says, "It takes courage to be 88 when you're planning to live to 104. So that means no time soon.
No time soon.
No time soon.
No time soon.
Wow. This has been, I think, one of the most remarkable. When we said big conversations.
This was what we were
this
thinking.
This is a big conversation.
Yeah.
Dolores, thank you so much.
Oh, my God. Awesome. Did I over-talk? Because I can do
no,
that.
No.
We just are under time.
and overwhelmed.
But I do want you, while we are still rolling here, to promise us that you'll come back.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Because I feel like we've only scratched the surface here.
I have so many more stories to tell.
Well,
I really do. And I am honored to be here. And I will be honored to come back.
No, we look forward to that. I will tell you, the other day, I'm looking at my Facebook, and I have a friend request from Dolores. And I'm like, it can't be really Dolores. I know we've got her schedule, but it was. I was like, holy cow. And I highly recommend it, by the way, because her Facebook feed is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, if you really, really want to get are we off the air now?
No, we're still
almost going. Still on the air. But if you really want to get a good picture of me, because the thing that everybody says about me is that I know everybody, and I do, because politically I mean Barack Obama, Kamala Harris's mother was my friend, Ronald Reagan invited me to Nancy Reagan's birthday party up at the ranch. I go from political to football to showbiz. So
all right, well, we know what we're talking about the next time.
I've got
a whole
up here, so
I've got a whole other list of questions.
I know.
Dolores Robinson, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, Dolores. This is awesome.
I mean it.
When we first started this podcast, when I thought about what kind of conversations with what kind of people, this is what we aspire to. This is one of the pinnacles.
I agree.
My friend Randy Florence, always a great co-host, amazing research. An incredible guest.
This was fantastic.
John McMullen, thank you.
John, you did a good job, too.
He did a great job. He took a lot of pictures and he stayed quiet.
And he laughed.
No.
We got a couple of laughs.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Skip Page and his entire team at Little Bar, who always take great care of us. We love being here, and we enjoy the fact that you guys come and sit with us each week. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss another episode of Big Conversations, Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans. Thanks for joining us.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all in between. Little bar at Big Conversations, Little Bar.